The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. And opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Afternoon, you are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is October the 18th, 2016. It's a Tuesday afternoon as I broadcast to you from this hot place here in North Carolina. It's kind of hot today. I'm not feeling too good out there. I do have a special program for you today as we will be connecting with Sister Jonina Irvin, who is a Black Panther Party alumni, their 50th anniversary. I don't know if it has come up already. I'm not sure the exact date that the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, as it was originally founded, if it was set up in October or November. So I'm a little bit confused about that. But hopefully Jonina, Sister Jonina Irvin, will be joining us, and she'll clear up any of those questions. She's only going to be with us about 20 minutes. So if you have any questions or comments for her, please get those in early. Let me go ahead and give out the telephone numbers. The conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Just hit *6 and 1 anytime you want to comment. Also, the studio line will be open. I thought it was open yesterday. Apologies if you tried to get in, but I had blocked it as I was getting calls unrelated to the program, and I forgot once the program started to open it back up. So I do have it open. The studio line is 704-951-5030. Now, not only is Sister Jonina Irvin a alumni of the Black Panther Party, but she's also a Black Talk Radio Network alumni. Even though the program Black Autonomy Federation Radio isn't on air anymore on the network, I still consider her and her husband family. And so they were on the network, I think, for a couple of years, but they are both still active. Activists or actionists, as Yohannan would call them, with the organization Black Autonomy Federation. So very, very emotional day for me. It's been a while since I talked to Sister Jonina, as well as her husband. So I'm looking forward to speaking with her today. There are a number of events that will be going on around the country. We have a couple of those events posted for you in btrcommunity.com. That's btrcommunity.com, the new online black social experience, which is a social media platform. So in the calendar, we do have some events coming up. I think one is going to be in California at the Berkeley Repertory Theater, and they will be presenting The Greatest Heist You Never Heard Of, The Discovery of J. Edgar Hoover's Secret FBI, and The Unveiling of COINTELPRO. And so definitely is COINTELPRO is something that every activist should know about and should study, because you will find that they still employ many of those same tactics. So we will be talking to Sister Jonina here in about a minute about what got her into the party, what motivated her, what does she think black liberation looks like now, or what it should look like to finally get rid of these oppressors. We will also discuss some of the news stories that's in the news. I also just got an alert before I came on the air about a courtroom event. We've been covering the Bronx 120 up there in New York, and they have a court date tomorrow, so I will certainly give you information about that. But let's go ahead and connect Sister Jonina. Give me a moment as I do that. I thought I had her number up already, but it is not up. So let me pull it up, all right, and get her on the air. Again, the telephone number, 704-951-5030, is the studio line. And the conference line is 641-715-5030. 3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Hit star 6 and 1 to come in on air. We are joined on air right now by Sister Jonina Irvin. Welcome to the program, Sister Jonina.
Thank you. It's good to talk with you again.
Yes, it is so good to talk to you. I was just telling the listeners, not only are you a Black Panther alumni, but I consider you and your husband, Lorenzo, as alumni of Black Talk Radio Network. Even though the, you know, Black Autonomy Federation program isn't on air, y'all are still a part of the history of this network. So it is certainly good to talk to you today.
We're glad to be part of that history also.
Now, I want to, speaking of history, I brought you on today. We had the 50th anniversary of the Black Panther Party upon us. Hopefully, you can clear up a question for me, Sister Jonina. When did it exactly form as a party? Because I'm getting two different dates. And I'm hearing that that it was set up in October, and then I'm hearing it was formed in November. So what's the actual anniversary date?
Well, the actual anniversary that both Bobby Seale and the late Huey P. Newton wrote about was October 15th, 1966. That's the date when they actually finished writing the 10-point platform and program of the Black Panther Party. So, and they both have written about that in, you know, articles and books that they have written. So it's October 15th, 1966.
Okay, October the 15th. So we're 3 days past the anniversary, but there are many different events coming up. Are there any events coming up that you will be taking part of?
I'm not going to be able to make it to the West Coast, so no. You know, doing this radio interview is you know, is good. I feel like this is a contribution that I can make. I'm not going to be able to, you know, go to the West Coast to participate in any particular event, no.
Okay. All right. So, Sister Jonina, I want to take you back in history. I want to take you back in time to when you were a younger woman. You're still young, but when you were a younger woman, what attracted you to the Black Panther Party? How did you find out about it? How and why did you join?
Well, I found out about it actually in the spring of 1967, May of 1967. In fact, I was nearing the end of my freshman year in college, and there was a news broadcast about a group of armed young Black men and women who had marched into the state legislature in California, in Sacramento, California. I didn't understand everything that was happening at the moment, but I found out later that they were there to protest a law that was being passed that would have disarmed the Black Panther Party, which at the time was doing the community patrols of the police. Mm-hmm. But when I saw these young armed men, black men and black women, I thought, wow, you know, they're going into the government legislature with guns. And I'm going to be honest with you. I thought they were crazy. I'm not going to lie and say, oh, I thought this was great. I thought this was absolutely insane. I said, they're going to be killed. These white people are not going to let them walk into the legislature and do that. So that's when I first heard of it, May 2nd, 1967. Then later on, I began to get more information about the programs, you know, the breakfast program.
Yes, ma'am.
And all the other issues that they were, you know, talking about. And I started to realize that, you know, for myself, I wanted to be part of a movement. I knew that by myself alone, I would not be able to do anything. I knew I would have to be part of a group. So, you know, I eventually did join the Black Panther Party.
So did you join that year, or was it the following year?
No, I did not. I actually, this was 67 when I first found out about them. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't join for another 5 years. I finished college, and then I went into to graduate school. I was kind of like maybe what you call the second wave of you know, people joined the party at different times, and I mm-hmm. may have been part of what was the second wave. I actually joined right after a period when there had been a lot of the FBI counterintelligence program had really kind of disrupted a lot of the work that the party had done. I joined in Detroit, Michigan, and the first chapter of the Black Panther Party in Detroit was actually the central headquarters of the Black Panther Party in Oakland. Actually closed that chapter down because there had been we didn't really know about COINTELPRO then. We didn't.
Yes,
we hadn't really found out about it yet. But we knew. But they knew something was wrong. There had been some disruption in the chapter, a lot of problems. So they closed that chapter down. That was the original chapter. But then by at least by the summer of 1972, a young brother by the name of Lonnie Darden had gotten permission to reorganize the Detroit chapter of the Black Panther Party. And so I joined at that time.
Wow, I was in Detroit at that time, too. I was just a little boy in elementary school, but I do remember Detroit fondly, but I also have some not-so-fond memories because I was one of the first group of children to be forcefully bused in Detroit, and I did not like being ripped from my local neighborhood mm-hmm. school and sent all the way across town to a predominantly white school. A very traumatic experience, but I was in Detroit at that time. Wow.
Okay.
Now, when you joined the party, at that time, you mentioned they had already had some of the survival programs going on. You mentioned, I think most people know about the free breakfast program, but they also had free medical clinics, literacy programs, food pantries, just political education class, just a whole wealth of different programs to address different issues in the community. So since they had programs already up and running, well, I don't know about the Detroit chapter since it was just being reformed, but what area did you go into and why?
Well, you know, just about all of us served in the breakfast program because there were a lot of children and it took a lot of us to be able to, you know, get the food ready and serve it to them and do the cleanup. So that's one area I worked in. I also worked on the busing to prisons program. The Black Panther Party had a program. I think the first busing to prisons program actually started in the Seattle, Washington chapter of the party. But once or twice a month, depending on what the local area, what their capacity was, we would take people free of charge to prisons to visit their family members and their loved ones. In some cases, they had, I think in Seattle, they actually did have a bus. In Detroit, we didn't have a bus, but we had cars and vans that we used to drive people. And that's one of the things that I did. I drove a car. I think most of the time it was a car. And we were going to the what was then called the Michigan State Prison in Lansing, Michigan. In Jackson, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And it's since been reorganized. It's probably called something else now. But at that time, it was called the Michigan State Prison. And at that time, it housed over 4,000 men.
Wow.
It was considered to be one of the largest prisons in the United States at that time. And, you know, I had never been inside a jail. I had, let alone a prison. I had seen a prison. I grew up in Jefferson City, Missouri, where the state prison there was located at that time, and my mother used to work there, so I had seen the prison, but I had never been in a prison. And this prison, I don't even know if you can imagine a prison housing 4,000 human beings. It was huge. And I remember the first time I drove people up there and went inside the prison, and it was just like, you know, I was talking about this the other day, it just like really blew me away. I had never seen anything like that. And, you know, it was a monstrosity, because I knew all these people were locked up there. And, you know, there's a part of me that, you know, really just wanted to be honest with you, just really wanted to break down and cry. It was so awful. But, you know, I was a Black Panther, so I didn't feel like I could cry, so I didn't. Maybe I did it later. But this was one of the programs that I worked in early on, and it gave me education about the reality of the U.S. criminal injustice system, because I came to really understand how unjust it was.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Now, at one point, it seems like I remember, you know, you talking about it, possibly with me or just during the course of the radio program. But at one point, am I remembering correctly, did you work on the newspaper, the Black Panther paper?
I did. I was actually the last editor of the Black Panther newspaper. I was the editor from about, I think it was March of 1978 until the paper's demise in September of 1980. The newspaper actually lasted 13 years. It started in the spring, I think it was April of 67, and it went all the way through until the fall of 1980. So yes, I did. I was the last editor of the paper, it was, you know, I had majored in journalism when I was in school and college, so I guess it was a, you know, a natural thing for me to want to work on the paper and to be able to do that. But I did that.
What was the circulation at its most popular point in history? Well, how many people were getting this paper?
Well, it was in the late 60s, up until about 1970. At one point, it had over 100,000 copies were being circulated in the United States. Now, I don't know what it was overseas, because we did ship some overseas.
Okay.
But over 100,000. And it was the only other, you know, so-called left alternative publication that had a bigger circulation was Muhammad Speaks, which was put out by the Nation of Islam. So it had a huge circulation. I mean, those were the numbers that were sold. But, you know, in the Black community, people get a newspaper, they read it, and they pass it on to somebody else, right?
Right.
So who knows how many acts people, it may have been 10 people that may have read one copy. But, but at its peak, it was over 100,000 copies a week.
And what kind of information would people find in the paper?
Well, you know, we were trying to give people an analysis of what was really happening, you know, in the United States. Sometimes you might find articles about what we were doing. You would definitely find news about what was going on with the Black Panther Party, the survival programs we had, the repression that was going on, the number of arrests, the counterintelligence program. We didn't know that was the name of it, but that's what it was, the repression that was going on against us. But we would also take national and international news events and interpret them in a way that we thought would help people to understand what was going on, whether it was something that was happening with the U.S. government, you know, in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. We were also reporting on news that was going on in Southern Africa, because in the late 60s and early 70s, you had all these African liberation struggles
right. That
were going on in countries like, it was called Rhodesia then, it's now Zimbabwe, Mozambique, a lot of countries.
South
and so
Africa.
We reported on all that.
Yeah, South Africa, Stevie Biko.
South Africa.
Yeah.
We had news, we had a column called Behind the Walls, and we would report on what was going on inside the prisons. You had a lot of people, men and women, who were going to prison back then who became, you know, radicalized by what was going on outside. And it came in, you know, from what was in the streets. People came from the streets into the prisons, so we reported on that. What was going on in the prisons? We got news from prisoners who would write us articles, send us letters, and things like that.
Wow! Okay, so the paper at that time, and I know you mentioned earlier at that time y'all did not know about COINTELPRO. But afterwards, did you ever come to realize the role that the American news media played in COINTELPRO?
We did after we, after those documents were stolen by those activists. I don't want to say stolen, I want to say liberated.
Liberated.
By the activists in Pennsylvania. That's how we found out about the counterintelligence program. When those documents became liberated, that forced the U.S. Congress to begin to investigate what the FBI and a lot of the other law enforcement agencies were doing, but specifically the FBI, because it was a federal agency.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's how we found out. We did find out about counterintelligence program. We did find out about all the actions that the FBI in particular had taken against the Black Panther Party. The FBI's counterintelligence program against the Black Liberation Movement was actually authorized in a memo sent out by J. Edgar Hoover in August of 1967. And it named various groups that it sought to disrupt and destroy, including SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, Nation of Islam, RAM, the Revolutionary Action Movement. The Black Panther Party was not in the initial group, but by 1968, the Black Panther Party had been added to that list, as well as, you know, Huey P. Newton, who was one of the co-founders of the Black Panther Party. So as we started to look at the COINTELPRO documents, as Congress, as the U.S. Senate, they had a committee called the Church Committee. It was named after the senator who was head of it. They began to hold hearings on these documents, and the stuff started coming out in the news media. And we did begin from that to understand how the U.S. news media had sought to undermine what we had doing, spread lies about us, misinformation. So we really owe a debt of gratitude to those activists who liberated those files from Pennsylvania, because we may never have known about it.
Yes, ma'am.
Had that not happened.
That's so very true. And now, in closing, as we get ready to wrap up our interview, I know I said I didn't want to keep you too long, but COINTELPRO, a lot of people are still in prison. We recognize them as political prisoners of war. And I've heard over the years, as I've covered those issues and talked to, you know, various people who were victims of that and or were advocates for political prisoners, one thing that I have heard mentioned about what should the U.S. government do outside of just releasing our prisoners of war, but a Truth and Reconciliation Commission along the lines of what we saw in South Africa. Do you think that is something that should be held today, and why?
Well, it would be good. I'm kind of skeptical that it will ever happen.
Yes, ma'am.
But if it were, it would be good, because a lot of people in the United States don't have any idea what the federal government did, the illegal, unlawful acts it took to try to destroy the Black Liberation Movement back in the late 60s and early 70s. And if there were something held like a truth and reconciliation hearings, then they would begin to hear exactly. You know, it makes a difference when you hear it from the mouths of the people who themselves were the victims of this repression and this government terror. And also to hear from the FBI agents and other law enforcement officers about what they did, the illegal, violent things that they did. They often provoked violence. They caused deaths, caused people to be killed. So I think it would be good, because for those people who don't think that this could happen in America, who don't believe that this kind of repression and terrorism could happen against people who were seeking to organize for their freedom and their liberation from racism and oppression. So it would be wonderful if it could happen. But I have to admit to you, I am a skeptic as to whether or not it ever will.
Yes, ma'am. So let me ask you this, and this will be my last question. So do you accept the apology of the police union representative who has issued a formal apology to minorities for the historic oppression by the police against these communities?
I just happened to watch that on TV right before, you know, we began this conversation, and, you know, No, I don't accept it. To say it's too little, too late is not even really to capture it. No, what needs to happen is that these kinds of acts need to stop. You know, black people, people of color, police need to stop shooting us down in the streets, you know, every day like we were animals or our dogs. That's what needs to happen immediately. A widespread, you know, they need to cease and desist. That's what they need to do. Apologizing is not going to, you know, do any good. It's certainly not going to bring anybody back who has been killed. So they just need to cease and desist from these unlawful actions. This amount, you know, this is back in the day. We talked a lot about, you know, genocide, which is, you know, the deliberate, targeted elimination and destruction of an ethnic group or a race of people. And to me, this all these killings of black people and other people of color in the United States, to me it represents a form of genocide. They don't have jobs for us, and they don't, you know, outside of putting us in prison, they don't have any other solution for black and poor people, so they shoot us down and kill us. So to me it's a form of genocide which needs to end immediately. So no, I do not, and I will not ever accept their apology.
I know I said that was the last question, but can you tell people what you're doing now? As I, in the introduction, pointed out that you and your husband are still very active, and it's just a shame, because I feel like y'all have sacrificed enough, you put in enough work, and that, you know, we, the younger people, we need to be doing our part and picking up the baton. But I'm not trying to force you all into retirement or anything like that. But can you tell people about your work now with the Black Autonomy Federation?
Well, we recently, you know, relocated. We had done a lot of work in Memphis, Tennessee, with the Black Autonomy Federation, which we co-founded with Brother Ross Manyiga Nokashir back in 2012. And we focused on, in fact, police brutality and police terror in Memphis, where we were living, between the beginning of 2012 and until at least by the end of 2015. The Memphis police had killed almost 30 people total, and that was one of the highest, if not the highest, but certainly one of the highest rates of police killings in the United States at that time. So we ran a campaign there called the Body Count. And, you know, we documented and got information about each of the killings by the police there, and, you know, tried to distribute that information as best we could in the community. We found a lot of people who lived in Memphis, they lived there. They didn't even know what was going on there. But we also got it out, you know, to other parts of the country. You know, the Internet is really great for that. So that had been a focus of our work while we were there. We have relocated now, and we are in the process of still getting settled in, and you know, figuring out the next moves and everything. But we continue to be concerned about the issue of police terror. We also, in recent times, had worked to help support the work of the Free Alabama Movement,
yes, ma'am.
Which started the September 9th prison strike. That is the longest prison strike in the history of the country. And we were particularly active, at least definitely throughout part of 2014 and 2015, into the early part of 2016 before we relocated, in supporting that work. So those are some of the things that we have been doing. We are elders now, but we are revolutionary elders. We're not ready to retire completely, but, you know, we're in the process of, you know, looking at the things that we have done and seeing how that we can best continue to contribute to the Black liberation struggle, because it's not over yet. By no means is it over.
Well, both you, your husband, Lorenzo, and shout out to Brother Ross Muniega up there in Canada, you all have been served as an inspiration to me. I cannot speak for other people, but you all have inspired me to continue along the lines of work that I'm working in through the media and what have you. So, I mean, I just am ever grateful to even have ever spoken to you all, but you do continue to inspire me, and let's hope by the time I'm ready to retire that this war will be over and we will have won. But I just want to thank you for your service to the people.
Well, thank you, and also thank you for giving the Black Autonomy Federation Radio a voice for the over a year that we did the show with you. We really appreciated that. It was really good. It helped us get the word out, and we will always be grateful to you for giving us that opportunity.
Yes, ma'am. Did you have anything in closing? If you would, in closing, how would you advise the current crop of young activists out there today? If you had to give them one piece of advice, what would that be?
Well, you know, don't allow yourself to be co-opted. You know, the struggle has to, you have to keep your, you know, they always talk about keep your eyes on the prize. And you can't allow forces who will come in and try to get you to engage in reforms, who want to mute your message. That to me is, and I see a lot of that going on right now in different parts of the country in different ways. Don't allow your voice to be muted. You know, keep it real and stay in charge of what you're trying to do, because you know what you're trying to do. And also, you know, make sure that, you know, you have, in addition to whatever issue you're dealing with, whether it's police brutality or what other issues, that you tie it to a core of belief about how you want to see the society change. The Black Panther Party, we organize against police brutality. We fed hungry kids. But we had some core beliefs about what we thought needed to happen in this country, that basically we wanted to see the oppression of Black and poor people in this country end. So develop your core beliefs along with whatever actions that you were doing, that you are doing. That the protests in the streets will always be necessary, but they are not enough. You will need to have some core beliefs that will guide you along the way to help transform the society the way that you wish it to be transformed, that where there is truly liberation and freedom for everyone.
Well, Sister Jonina, thank you again for your life of service to the people who need help the most, and that's the oppressed. And again, I am forever grateful for you, your husband, and the rest of the Black Panther Party. And in closing, I just want to say all power to the people.
All power to the people.
You have a great evening, ma'am.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, that was Sister Jonina Irvin. I just really miss hearing her voice and hearing the voice of Brother Ross up there in Canada, as well as Brother Lorenzo, as these are elders in the struggle, and just the information that they would share, the wisdom that they collectively held or still hold. I just miss them so much, but I understand, you know, nothing is forever and people have to make transitions, plans change, but I really miss them. And the year or so that they were on the network was a great time with them. I really fully enjoyed working with them to produce that program. So I will forever be grateful to them for their lifetime of service. Because, hey, they did not have to do anything. They could just keep their head down and just try to get by and go to the 9-to-5 plantation and just worry about putting food on the table and keeping a roof over their own heads. But that is not who they were. And they were concerned and are concerned still out there putting in work, are concerned about the quality of life of people today. So, I mean, what can you say? What can you say about such great people? I am overdue for a station identification break. And when I come back, I will give you more information for those who are in California or are able to travel. But on October the 21st, this Friday, there will be a screening of a film about COINTELPRO. And we will also listen to the promo that they put out about it. So stay tuned. Again, if you have any questions, comments, if you have any memories about the Black Panther Party, any reflections that you would like to share, please do so. Please do so. The telephone numbers are 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Hit *6 and 1 if you would like to comment. The studio line, 704-951-5030. We'll be back on the other side.
The Black Talk Media Project funds the use of new media technology in efforts to restore independent Black voices to the myriad of issues affecting Afro-descendant people all over the planet. If media can control the minds of the masses, as Malcolm X once said, then you must ask yourself, who is in control of the media targeting the masses of Black people today? Help bring back independence, self-determination, and respect for Black culture in the production of global media by joining the effort to crowdfund new Black media for the new millennium. Visit blacktalkmediaproject.org for more information on how you can invest in public Black radio for the masses.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, my name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines that I call USA Inc. Just some quick network news. I have gotten more shirts for the Black Radio Stations Matters crowdfunding campaign. Again, we give these shirts out for free to people who make a contribution of $25 or more. If you want more than one shirt, just give it in increments of $25. And the shipping cost, one shipping cost that we'll, you know, send it anywhere in the United States. Sorry if you're outside of the United States, but if you're within the United States, the shipping cost is only like $6 and some change. And so, yeah, I have gotten the new shirts in. We had ran out of those extra, extra large shirts, so I have gotten more in. For those who had some on back order, I will get those out. First thing in the morning, I will make up the packages tonight and they will be out tomorrow. So just wanted to let you know, if you want to contribute and help fund independent Black media, I kind of feel like the role of Black Talk Radio Network is the role that the Black Panther Party newspaper played during its existence. As I was listening to Sister Jonina say that they would tell them about the news that they were seeing in the corporate media, but then they would break it down and explain it to them. Okay. and make sure that they weren't confused about anything that was going on. I kind of feel like that's what we do here on the network. I know we have different programs, and each host has his own personality, has his own area that he or she likes to focus on. And so you will find some diversity among the opinions, but one thing is for certain, every last one of us do care about the Black community, and we are doing what we do to make sure that they have the proper information and that they have a source of information other than the enemy's propaganda outlet. So you can go to blacktalkmediaproject.org or blacktalkradionetwork.com. You will see a button that says crowdfunding Black Media. Click on that button. Also give you a little bit of information on why you should support it. And we cite specifically the 1996 Telecommunications Act. If you don't know what that did to Black media, definitely go read up on it. And we provide some of that information to you on those pages. Okay, now I said that I wanted to share a little bit more information. Again, in California, I am on btrcommunity.com. In the calendar events, we have a post there that says, in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the Black Panther Party, the National Alumni Association of the Black Panther Party, in association with the Berkeley Repertory Theater, presents Greatest Heists You Never Heard Of, COINTELPRO Exposed. So again, if you are a longtime listener of Black Talk Radio, especially when we had the radio program, which I used to co-host and co-produce along with Sister Amijo, who's going through some of her own issues right now, but we had to shut that down because I was just overextending myself. But I will start including more information about our political prisoners. But we used to do a Sunday night program called Political Prisoner Radio. The podcasts are still available. People still listen to them as well. But we talked a lot about COINTELPRO, because you can't talk about political prisoners without talking about COINTELPRO. So they will be presenting The Greatest Heist You Never Heard Of, The Discovery of J. Edgar Hoover's Secret FBI, and The Unveiling of COINTELPRO, featuring 1971, Before Watergate, WikiLeaks, and Edward Snowden, There Was Media, Pennsylvania, a film which is directed by Johanna Hamilton, who also co-produced Pray the Devil Back to Hell. So there is a promo. Let me see if I can pull up the promo. Yes, I can pull it up. And let me just allow you to listen to this promo ahead of the 50th anniversary event that will be taking place in California on the 21st. So let's go ahead and pull that up. The person you'll hear speaking is Dr. John C. Raines, retired professor of religion at Temple University.
Hi, I'm Dr. John Raines, and I've recently retired from the religion department at Temple University after teaching there for almost 50 years. I want to talk with you about an important event coming up this October out in Oakland, California. But before I do that, I want to say a word about who I am. In the early 1960s, I became active in the civil rights movement. One of the things I did is I became a freedom rider. I rode buses down south to test whether or not the interstate travel arrangements were in fact desegregated, as the Supreme Court said they had to be. Four of us, two blacks and two whites, left St. Louis and traveled to Little Rock, Arkansas in July of 1961. The four of us went together, black and white together, into the white reading room where we were arrested on the charge of a threatened breach of the peace. The next day, we went before a judge. He took us into chambers before finding us guilty, and he said, I need to have you know why I'm going to find you guilty, because if I don't, I won't get reelected. Now, that was the beginning of a second education, an education I desperately needed but did not know at that time that I needed. You see, I was born, rather obviously, a white male. But I was born into a family of very considerable class privilege. We had live-in maids, private schools, and even for a while, a governess. In other words, I was born into, without my asking it, I was born into privilege and power, a small bubble at the top of our society. That was the first world I lived. It was the first world I learned. That was the first self I became. But then, in that courtroom, in Little Rock, standing before that judge, I found myself in a place I had never been before, outside of power, regarded by power as the enemy of power, and power had the power to punish me for that. I was beginning to get a second education most folks like me never did get. I was beginning to see what the world looked like and lived like, not from top down, but from bottom up. That would take me many years later to look at what was going on in J. Edgar Hoover's FBI. Those of us who were active in the civil rights movement knew that he hated the civil rights movement. He hated Martin Luther King. We also knew that he hated the anti-war movement and all kinds of dissent. But we didn't know how to prove that. So a group of us, called the Citizens Commission to Investigate the FBI, decided to break in to an FBI office in Media, Pennsylvania in March of 1971. We removed the files and then sent them to the newspapers. For the first time, that man, J. Edgar Hoover, was held accountable by newspapers and by folks in our government. For the first time, he had to begin to explain what he had been doing with his FBI. Eventually, those files would leave a path to the discovery and disclosure of his dirty tricks outfit called COINTELPRO. COINTELPRO was an unconstitutional, illegal activity that targeted and destroyed groups of racial justice workers and dissent against the war in Vietnam. One of the groups that he targeted and nearly destroyed was the Black Panthers. This coming October, out in Oakland, California, there's going to be a very important event. The Black Panther Party will be celebrating its 50th anniversary. I'm going to be there, and I hope you might be able to be there as well. But it's important that we raise funds beginning today so that those events can be the kind of celebration they deserve to be. So please give what you can, and I hope to see you out in California in October. Goodbye.
Okay, so that's the promo. That's a you will find that promo in the calendar event listing. Again, the name of it is The Greatest Heist You Never Heard Of, The Discovery of COINTELPRO. And it will go down on October the 21st. Now, you can still donate money, even if you're not able to attend, to the alumni association for the Black Panther Party, so they can continue on with the work that they do in educating the public on these various issues. You can go to www.naabpp. So that is N as in Nancy, A as in Apple, A as in Apple, B as in boy, and P as in Paul. So that's naabpp.org. They also have an Indiegogo campaign that is going on, but you will be able to find links that you need on btrcommunity.com. Again, it is in the calendar event section. So let me say this about this is why I was telling someone on Tando Radio Show, which airs on this network at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, or maybe it was a call into this program. Yeah, it was a call into Black Talk Radio News. I'm sorry, I was mistaken. The caller called in and he asked me a question about swirling, which I was not really up on that term or anything. And then we started, you know, talking about trust. Who can you trust? Who do you trust? This is what I learned from COINTELPRO. I studying this. This is why I developed my philosophy of being suspicious of everybody. Okay. Because COINTELPRO recruited black people to destroy black organizations. Now, I came up with a term to describe black people who helped the enemy, and I call them proxy racists. Our enemies are racist. That's who the enemy is. That's who I've identified the enemy as. Racist, slavers, and what have you. And there were just far too many black people who were either all too willing or willing to improve their station in life by betraying their comrades and betraying the movement and betraying their people, period, and betraying justice. So this is why I passed along that information to that caller. This is why I don't trust anybody, okay? Not to say that there aren't people I'm working with that I trust, but that trust was earned. It was not just given for the sake of giving. I don't trust anybody. I don't care what color you are, because all I know is you working for the FBI or some other slave catching organization. And so that is why I said that I don't want people to be paranoid or anything. But if you're doing any kind of counter-racist work, if you're doing any kind of movement work, if you are practicing truth-telling, you will become a target. You will become a target. And so that is why I say, don't trust anyone. Treat everybody equally. Be equally suspicious of everybody until they prove themselves to be trustworthy. So COINTELPRO, if I learned anything from COINTELPRO, is how to protect the Black Talk Media Project from infiltration like that. Okay? And I think it's very important to learn that lesson, because the tactics are still ongoing. They have not changed whatsoever. They haven't changed up. So, very important that our young people, especially those involved in activist work, movement work, is very, very important that they learn lessons. And they also should draw upon the wisdom and the knowledge of our elders in our communities who were engaged in this work when they were young people in college and in even high school. So, those are my thoughts on COINTELPRO. And so I will still try to bring on some more Black Panther Party alumni. Would love to talk. Brother Lorenzo wasn't able to speak today because he was busy with some projects, but would love to hook up with Brother Ross again from Canada, see if we can get him to come on this week or possibly next week, because I just really do appreciate them, and I love talking to them whenever I can to pick their brain and just learn from them, learn from our elders, because they've been through what we're going through now. And it's not just learning what worked, but it's learning what did not work, learning from those mistakes. All right, so that concludes this segment on the anniversary of the Black Panther Party. But by no means am I going to stop bringing that history to you. Some of the other things that's in the news that I wanted to talk about, I mentioned the head slave catcher of the largest police union in the United States offering an apology for the slave catcher's historic oppression of non-white communities. So I haven't had the opportunity to listen to his comments. I just read about it, and I was like, I pretty much had the same reaction that we heard from Sister Jonina. You know, a little bit too little, too late. But I will give my other thoughts on it after we listen to this Associated Press report that we're sharing with you under the fair use laws. This is the slave catcher. I don't know his name. Don't even really care to know his name. But he is the head of the largest police union, the one that just got through endorsing that racist Donald Trump. So this is this guy, head slave catcher.
Over the years, thousands of police officers have laid down their lives for their fellow citizens, while hundreds of thousands more have been injured while protecting their communities. The nation owes all of these officers, as well as those who are still in patrol today, an enormous debt of gratitude. At the same time, however, it is also clear that the history of policing has had darker periods. There have been times when law enforcement officers, because of the laws enacted by federal, state, and local governments, have been the face of oppression to far too many of our fellow citizens. In the past, the laws adopted by our society have required police officers to perform many unpalatable tasks, such as ensuring legalized discrimination or even denying the basic rights of citizenship to many of our fellow Americans. While this is no longer the case, this dark side of our shared history has created a generational, almost inherited mistrust between many communities of color and the law enforcement agencies they serve them. Many officers who do not share this common heritage often struggle to comprehend the reasons behind this historic mistrust. As a result, they are often unable to bridge this gap and connect with some segments of their communities. While we obviously cannot change the past, it is also clear that we must change the future. We must move forward together to build a shared understanding. We must forge a path that allows us to move beyond our history and identify common solutions to better protect our communities. For our part, the first step in this process is for the law enforcement profession and the IACP to acknowledge and apologize for the actions of the past and the role that our profession has played in society's historical mistreatment of communities of color. At the same time, those who denounce the police must also acknowledge that today's officers are not to blame for the injustices of the past. If either side in this debate fails to acknowledge these fundamental truths, we'll be unable to move beyond the past.
Okay, so you just heard from the slave catcher. Again, this police union, the IAC, whatever he said, but I do recognize those letters because they are the ones that I was just talking about last week on this program when the sheriff's department, which is I think is headed up by Steve Israel down there in Broward County, Florida, where the Miami Dolphins play, and saying that they support the sheriff's department going on strike and saying that, hey, if you want to protest the slaver's anthem or the slaver's flag during the national anthem and take a knee or raise a fist or whatever, that we're not going to provide you with an escort. So I took that as saying that, hey, guess what? We're going to let the angry cracker mob attack you football players and what have you. Okay, so I don't care for this man's apology. Again, he is talking about the history, but what about the present? So who's the cause of the world's largest prison population on the planet? Who's the cause of that? Those people did not just walk up to the prison and say, hey, make a slave of me. I just want to be a slave so bad. Please let me into your prison plantation so I can live out my dream of being a slave. No, that did not happen. You don't have slaves without slave catchers. Now, again, these are people who, in my opinion, are cowards. I don't want to hear about, no, well, that was the law of the land. And well, if the law is immoral, if the law is wrong, then you should have enough courage to say, you know what, this is wrong what I'm engaging in. This is morally reprehensible. These laws are unjust, and I'm not going to enforce them. And so I'm going to resign my position as a slave catcher. So, again, when we look at, like I was talking about, cannabis legalization yesterday and talking about the science of the medicinal benefits of cannabis and what have you, they're still prosecuting or enforcing these anti-liberty, anti-justice laws. That's the number one tool that they use on the books, laws on the books, is the cannabis prohibition to lock people up. So ain't nothing changed, Mr. Slave Catcher. You still engaged in the same thing. So to say that those things are in the past and like none of these officers today are responsible for carrying out unjust laws and what have you is BS. BS. When we look out and we see the news of individual officers turned whistleblower who say, you know what? This ain't right. They should not be beating up on handcuffed suspects and what have you. They should not be targeting people. Hey, they shouldn't be gunning down unarmed people. So I'm going to tell it. I'm going to tell it. I'm going to record my commander telling me to go out here in the streets and target young black men from the age of 16 to 21. I'm going to record him. I'm not going to do that. And then I'm just going to protest up the chain. And then when they retaliate against me, I'm going to file a lawsuit. So we've seen that happen. We've seen that happen. So I don't want to hear about, oh, you know, things are so different now. What's in the past is in the past. And none of that kind of stuff is going on today. It's absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense. So he could have kept his old apology. I'm like Sister Jonina. You know, you lying. You're lying. So, no, I'm not accepting that. Not accepting that. So I thought that it was interesting that a slave catcher would step forward and issue that apology, but then explain to me then your endorsement of Donald Trump. Not to say that Hillary Clinton's any better or anything like that, but how do you endorse someone like a Donald Trump who wants to take America backwards in terms of quote unquote race relations, who endorses modern day slavery and human trafficking? I'm going to take a station identification break. When I come back on the other side, I'm going to continue on this line of reporting. Donald Trump is being backed by the world's second largest private prison group. So we will talk about it again. Wouldn't nobody be in prison if it wasn't for the slave catchers? And again, I know that if a person commits murder, if they commit rape, if they, you know, do anything that's against another human being, yes, they should be made to give an account for that. But again, 70% or more of the prison slave population is in there for a nonviolent, victimless crimes. So we'll talk about that on the other side. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. Again, want to tell you about btrcommunity.com, a new online black social experience. It is a subscription-based social media platform. From the funds raised from this platform, we will use towards building independent black media and some of the projects that we have envisioned for the future. We will be back on the other side.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Yeah.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. I want to point you to MotherJones.com. Again, all of these stories that I share, I also share them in BTRCommunity.com. So Mother Jones came out with an article. Let me see when this article was published, because I do not see a date. Yesterday, it was published yesterday by a person by the name of Russ Choma. The title of this article says, Private Prison Company Bankrolls Pro-Trump Super PAC. The timing of the GO Group's six-figure contribution to Rebuild America now seems significant. It's unusual for a publicly traded corporation to donate to a super PAC, but in August, Private Prison Company GEO Group steered $150,000 to Rebuild America Now, a pro-Donald Trump outfit launched by the GOP nominee's longtime friend, developer Tom Barrett. The timing of the GO Group's contribution is significant. It cut a $100,000 check to the Super PAC on August the 19th, the day after the Justice Department announced that it would phase out the use of private prisons. The company's political action committee donated $50,000 to Rebuild America, now a week before the announcement. The multi-billion dollar a year private prison industry has been under increasing scrutiny, in part thanks to a groundbreaking investigation by Mother Jones that revealed a litany of disturbing practices at a Louisiana prison run by the Correction Corporation of America. That's the largest, the world's largest, not just the United States, the world's largest private prison enslaver. That's CCA. The GEO Group, the second largest, is one of just three companies that operate prisons and detention centers on behalf of the federal government. It's no surprise the company is putting its money behind Trump. While Hillary Clinton has sharply criticized private prisons, Trump has expressed support for expanding their use and his policy proposals, including his plan to deport millions of undocumented immigrants, could be a boon for the industry. In addition to backing Trump, the company recently brought on three lobbying firms to represent its interests in Washington. So I read this to not to really give Donald Trump any attention or anything like that. I'm not a partisan person. I have no political affiliations. I do vote, but I'm an independent voter. I vote what I see as in the best interest of black people and other marginalized groups. Number one, abolitionists. I'm an abolitionist. I want to end slavery. So with that foremost on my mind, that is how my vote is informed. Now, so I just wanted to bring it up, the huge amounts of money that's being spent right now on this election to keep slavery going stronger than ever. Okay, Donald Trump, I've talked about him when he gave a press conference in Wisconsin, one of the worst states for modern day slavery. And he was just saying, you know, his usual third grader type language. Oh, I think private prisons are great. So we know what he is about, and we know what Hillary Clinton has been about. And even though she may be changing her tune now, in the 1990s, she was Donald Trump in the 1990s. Her and Bill Clinton were Donald Trump passing legislation to criminalize people behavior and to increase the population of prison slaves. Now she's changing her tune. Can she be trusted? I would say no. But again, my issue isn't so much of who's going to become the next CEO of USA Inc., because regardless of who that is, like H. Rapp Brown, a Black Panther Party alumni and a current political prisoner, like he said years ago, It don't matter who become president. Black folks still going to have to fight because that person is going to represent the interests of the state, not black people. And I think that lesson has been, I don't know how many people learned that lesson, but it certainly was being taught for the past 8 years with a black person as CEO of USA Inc. Okay? We still had to fight, still had to push this man to abolish slavery, and he's very, very slick with their propaganda to make you think, oh, we're reforming the system. But again, you can't reform it. Going back to what Sister Jonina said, you can't reform it. Going to what Johannin and Max say on New Abolitionist Radio, you have to abolish slavery. You can't reform it. So although they were saying, oh, we reduced the crack cocaine disparity from 100 to 1 to 18 to 1. Well, that's still not fair. And still, you shouldn't be putting people in slavery for nonviolent use of substances. You don't have to approve of what they're using, but who are you to tell another man or woman what they can and cannot put in their body? If you're so concerned about them, you will be directing resources towards treatment facilities instead of prison plantations. So he passed that, and then the Obama administration, when those current prisoners said, hey, I was sentenced under those 100-to-1 guidelines, it wasn't right, I want to now be resentenced under the new guidelines. And the Obama administration fought that. Fought against it. Okay? So don't be fooled. It's not about always who's going to be the CEO, regardless of who they may be. We're still going to have to fight them because they are selected to represent the interests of the corporation, not you. Not me, not us. So we are always going to have to fight those people and keep pushing for concession after concession after concession. And as I learned from some of my revolutionary elders, you know, all of this is pending the revolution. Getting in work, trying to bring relief to as many people as possible, pending the revolution. So as I was fond of saying on New Abolitionist Radio, you know, Max is a anarchist. I'm not really an anarchist or anything like that, but we both see that slavery is wrong and we want to abolish it. So I'm like death by a thousand paper cuts by any means necessary. Whatever you can do, whatever I can do, it still amounts to we are doing something. So I thought that was interesting that the GO Group, which has suffered massive stock loss in its stock price, as we have been reporting on this network. I like to think that New Abolitionist Radio had also a role in this, as we have been doing these programs for 4 years. And we would also call into their earnings calls that they have, quarterly earnings calls. They would never answer any questions from us, but we got to listen in to what the modern day slavers have planning and listen to how, you know, just the different things that they were planning on doing or had done and what have you. So just thought it was interesting. I think this is a move of desperation on their part to throw $150,000 at a pro-Trump super PAC. Don't get me wrong, they probably giving money to Hillary Clinton too. They give to both sides of the aisle because Republicans and Democrats both practice slavery. Both of them. Okay? So don't be fooled by any of it. All right, so let me see. I do have some more news before I get ready to wrap it up, since we don't have any questions or comments from any other callers. I like to be I like to use my time wisely. Okay, so do have some news that I want to share with you. This comes from Tag, who is a member of btrcommunity.com, also a Black Talk Media Project intern. Tag has posted in the calendar of btrcommunity.com. If you are in the New York, New Jersey area, they are asking that you pack the court for the Bronx 120. Now, we did do a show a couple of weeks ago about the massive raid that was conducted against a black community in New York by the FBI, by the NYPD slave catchers, by I also think the U.S. Marshal Services, and certainly the Department of Justice was involved in charging these young men who may or may not have been involved in a gang or something like that, but charging them under RICO. Under RICO, that's what's used to go after organized crime. We're talking about young men who have been engaged in some unconstructive activities and then pay for those in prison, but now they want to come back and punish them a second time. Like I stated on that program, this is nothing but the move of petulant children who were angry that the stop and frisk program in New York City was declared unconstitutional and they couldn't just target black men 16 to 21 as that one NYPD slave patrol commander directed his slave patrollers to do. So they got angry, and to me this was nothing but retaliation. And we talked about on New Abolitionist Radio, hey, RICO, that certainly applies to many of these municipalities and police departments and courts who have been targeting the black community, writing tickets, shuffling them from jail to jail. It was all in the Department of Justice Ferguson report. Okay? And we've seen similar patterns and practices. So again, to that slave catcher that want to act like all that stuff is in the past, no, it's not in the past. And that's why we don't accept your apology, because it's insincere and you are lying about what you're doing today. So you want to pack the court if you are in the New York City area. I'm pulling up the details. Let me share those details with you. Says on April 27, 2016, over 700 NYPD and federal officers using military-grade equipment executed the largest mass raid in NYC history in East Chester Gardens in the Bronx. 120 people were arrested and indicted on the basis of conspiracy charges. The NYPD and the feds are using conspiracy charges and social media monitoring to indict whole social networks. So again, this goes back to the articles that have been coming out over the past couple of weeks about Facebook, Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, and Twitter, allowing the CIA front company Geofedia, which developed technology to track people on social media, and the cops were using it to target black activists. So again, how many times you got to be warned about sharing too much information on the enemy's platforms? All right. So anyway, it goes on to say the some of the men indicted have already been acquitted for the charges on a state level, but under Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act, RICO, they are being charged on a federal level for conspiring to commit the crime. The use of RICO in black and brown communities is a continuation of strategies such as COINTELPRO, the street sweep and stop and frisk used to terrorize communities of color and perpetuate mass incarceration. I would just change that to say perpetuate mass enslavement. The newly appointed police commissioner, James O'Neill, oversaw the arrest of the Bronx 120, and we can be certain that under his regime that these mass raids and kidnapping of young black men will continue. Please come out and stand in solidarity with the BX 120 and their families on their first court date, October the 19th at 9 a.m. This would be Eastern time. For more information, you can go to www.bronx120.org. If you would like to donate, you can go to go to btrcommunity.com. You will see the link there. Let me see if I can get it somewhere else. But definitely go to bronx120.org. I'm sure you can find out information there on how to donate to a legal defense fund on the behalf of the Bronx 120. All right. So, again, their first court date will be tomorrow at 9 a.m. Please go to the website so you can get details on what courtroom or what courthouse it will be in. Okay. Let me see if there's anything else that I failed to cover that I meant to cover. Lots of great information being shared on BTRcommunity.com. We are still just a small community, but we are growing, and glad to see the level of participation that we have been seeing from the members in sharing information and just having conversations back and forth on the issues that's being discussed. Here's one article. WikiLeaks reveals that the Democratic National Committee elevated Trump to help Clinton. So this is something you may have heard on this network, definitely on this program, that I believe that Donald Trump and the Clintons got together, possibly Bill and Donald, maybe while they was on a trip to Lolita Island, you know, getting down with Jeffrey Epstein and his underage sex slaves and what have you. Maybe they hashed it while they was on Lolita Express flying to his island, or maybe they hatched this plot on the golf course and whatnot. Look, people, you don't invite people to your wedding unless they're your friends. You just don't invite people to the wedding just for the sake of inviting them to the wedding. And the Clintons were at Donald Trump's latest wedding. Okay? And so we knew from WikiLeaks and other leaks that the DNC violated its own rules and regulations in conducting primaries by favoring Hillary Clinton over, what was his name, Bernie Sanders. They are actually, there is a class action lawsuit that has gone forward against the DNC for doing that. But now it is turning out that it is being revealed, I should say, through these WikiLeaks of these emails from these DNC officials that they were using their contacts in the media. Again, this all, again, is how COINTELPRO worked. Didn't work without the media's participation. And so using their contacts in the media to promote Donald Trump. So all the people I heard complaining about, why are they showing Donald Trump all the time? Why are they giving him all this free coverage? They're showing him more than they're showing everybody. Well, there you go. That was the plan, to help Donald Trump secure the Republican nomination, because in head-to-head matchups against other people, Hillary Clinton lost. She lost. So they just wanted to make sure she had the path of least resistance. And certainly Donald Trump has played his role in doing his best to turn people off from voting for him. He is doing his best to sabotage his own campaign. He really is. This man is not an ignorant man by any means. We like to think that he's stupid, but no, he's not the stupid one. He's playing his role perfectly. This man does not want to become the next CEO of USA Inc. He doesn't want that job. He doesn't act like it to me that he wants that job. So again, this just is more confirmation from what other people were saying, that I was saying, that look, this is just a setup. This is a setup. Hillary Clinton is going to become the next CEO. Donald Trump is out there doing what he's doing, just playing his role to help her obtain that position. And now we have proof. Now we have from their own emails that that's what they did. Use their contacts in the media to give Donald Trump all of this free coverage. He didn't even have to pay for no ads. None. He didn't have to. Not that you would really run ads during a primary process or a nomination process. So, but I mean, they did everything to get this man as much exposure as possible. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Again, I vote. Am I voting for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? Nope. Doesn't really matter who I vote for CEO of USA Inc. That has already been decided in my mind. They already know who that's going to be. And regardless of who it's going to be, like I said, I will be opposing that person. Just like I have opposed the policies of Barack Obama over the past 8 years. Nothing has changed for me. I am more concerned about local politics than I am about who becomes the next CEO of USA Inc. Okay. All right. So that's the end of today's broadcast of Black Talk Radio News. I will not be broadcasting Wednesday afternoon because I will be broadcasting at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern that evening as part of the producers and host of New Abolitionist Radio, where we focus on 21st century slavery and human trafficking and hopefully helping people to understand that this isn't mass incarceration. This is slavery. This isn't Jim Crow. This is slavery. This isn't anything other than slavery. Nothing's changed. It isn't. We're not in a different period of oppression. It's the same period of oppression. Just one long continuous period of oppression. And it all, in my opinion, in my informed, researched opinion, it all starts with slavery. So that's what we focus on week in and week out on New Abolitionist Radio. I hope that you will tune in and bring a friend along with you in hopes that they will learn something about what we are facing. It's not new. It's the same old evil, the same old evil institution of slavery. Don't have to, again, imagine what you would have done in the 1800s. You can imagine what you can do something now, okay? How you're living now while slavery is still going on. All right, so recognize the fact that you do live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Slavery is the law of the land. It's the supreme law of the land. And these slave catchers are not your friends. They're not your buddy. Okay. Their primary existence is to practice slavery, to catch slaves for the plantation. And they've been doing a very good job of it. Okay. So once you recognize these things and you come to the realization of what you're really, really dealing with, it is my hope that you will take these things serious and you will act accordingly. Do not be out walking around in the streets acting like everything is just hunky-dory, sunshine and flowers and all of that kind of stuff. No, keep your head on a swivel. Keep your head on a swivel. Always be aware of your surroundings. With that said, until tomorrow, peace and blessings to all. You be safe out there. Keep it locked on the station. Coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time will be Tando Radio Show. This is Scotty Reed. I'm out.